Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this sleepy Monday. It's March 10th. We have sprung ahead. And currently we're at 31 degrees here in Old Town Park City and 32 degrees in the Heber Valley under mostly sunny skies. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Hayes. How early did it feel to you?
Leslie, it felt very early. You know, it's hard to believe. You know, when you wake up this time in the morning, it's like, oh, yeah, we did spring forward. We definitely lost that hour. And also, it produced some impacts. You probably noticed if you were driving around early this morning that the sunrise was later, not until after 7:45. And that's something that we're going to have to deal with. So be careful if you're going to be driving through some of those school zones over the next couple of mornings just to adjust to that. But otherwise, the good news from that is the sunset is after 7:30 in the evening. So we are going to have some daylight that's going to stick around later into the day. And that's going to help our temperatures, too. In fact, high temperatures in Park City are expected to climb into the upper 40s to right around 50 degrees this afternoon with lots of sunshine. And because of that later sunset, we will likely hit the 50-degree mark this afternoon. The Heber Valley will be climbing into the mid-50s for highs as we go throughout today. And then tonight, we're looking at partly cloudy skies, cool conditions as we drop back down into the mid-20s in the Heber Valley. And notice we'll look at temperatures dropping down to around 30 in Park City. But as we go throughout the day on your Tuesday, we've got more of a taste of spring-like weather heading our way with highs climbing back near 50 in Park City and highs into the mid-50s there in the Heber Valley. Wednesday will be a day of change, though. As you know, the great things can't last forever, and Wednesday we'll start to see that change as a cold front begins to approach the area from the west. Ahead of that front, we're going to see those gusty winds, so you're going to notice the winds picking up as we go throughout the day on Wednesday. We should stay dry, but overall we'll call it partly to mostly cloudy skies. Temperatures starting off around 30 degrees during the morning hours, but by the afternoon we're climbing into the mid to upper 40s in Park City and the mid-50s for the Heber Valley. Now, as we go into your Thursday, here we go. The next big storm system rolls in, and once again, it taps into an atmospheric river, so we're looking at lots of moisture moving in. Looks like in the Heber Valley, Thursday will feature mostly a cold rain out there as we see those snow levels sticking to around 6,500 feet or higher. But in Park City, we'll likely probably be dealing with rain or snow mix, if not snow. And then as we go into your Thursday night into Friday, that's when I think it all flips over to snow for everyone, and we could be talking about another significant snow accumulating event moving in, very similar to what we saw last week at the end of last week, looks to occur at the end of this week. But the difference is, as we go into this weekend, it's not going to be warming back up and drying out. We're looking at off and on chances of snow continuing as we go throughout the weekend into the beginning of next week as we get into a more active weather pattern. So looks like we've got a couple of nice days of spring to enjoy, Leslie, and then as we head into the end of the week into the weekend, winter returns in a big way.
Okay, Cedric, thanks so much. KPCW News Time now, 8:09. And taking a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, it's Nikki. Good morning.
Good morning. So yesterday was a generally quiet day in the backcountry. We've continued to get reports of natural and skier-triggered wet loose avalanches, primarily on the south-facing slopes and the west-facing slopes during the afternoons with the highest period of warming. All of these avalanches have ranged in size from very small to relatively large. They're entraining quite a bit of snow, and it's enough to bury a human, so be aware of where you are, especially later in the afternoon and on those solar slopes. Today, we've got two main issues. The first is still that persistent weak layer that we keep chatting about. So right now, there's two persistent weak layers in the backcountry. The first layer, or the layer higher in the snowpack, is just beneath last week's storm. It's easily identified by a dirt layer that marks it. We've seen a few significant avalanches remotely triggered in the last week, and they're worth noting. The second persistent weak layer that we continue to talk about is the same deep, sugary, faceted layer that's been with us since the holidays. It's been the culprit of multiple accidents across Utah. So this deep layer now sits anywhere between 2 and 4 feet down, and it's most suspect on slopes that have previously avalanched or repeater slopes. Overall, though, field work is beginning to point in the right direction and that we are seeing improving stability, but both layers remain a concern. The best way to confirm if those layers exist is to just get your shovel out and dig in the snow. And then with those warm temperatures, we're going to want to think about wet snow. The peak wet snow instability occurred over the last few days when the cold snow saw its first exposure to warm temperatures. Snowpack seems to be adjusting well to the daytime temps and still some overnight refreezes. That said, wet snow avalanches are still going to be possible today. Expect to see them as the temperatures rise. timing's going to be key. So get off those steep sunlit slopes before they warm.
Okay, Nikki, thanks so much.
Yep.
KPCW News Time now, 8:11. It's 8:11. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. In just a minute, we'll be checking in with Summit County Health Department Director Phil Bondurant with a monthly update. Also, I'll be checking in with U.S. Ski and Snowboard's Director of Marketing and Communications, Courtney Harkins, the co-founder and development director of Park City Opera, Liesl Wangerman, with details on their upcoming event, and Park City Education Foundation President and CEO Ingrid Whitley, along with Vice President of Advancement, Jen Billow, with details on the preschool openings and Running with Ed. Then stay tuned for Mountain Money. Today's guests include John Lechner, author of Death is Our Business, the book, a deep dive into the story of the mercenary organization, the Wagner Group. Then a conversation with Megan Gitlin about the Utah Association for Corporate Growth Deal of the Year Award winners. And finally, Rob and Rachel Alde, the owners of Lolo's Laundry and Abode Luxury Rentals, join them. All of this coming up this morning at 9 a.m. right after the local news hour. Good morning. In the studio with an update from the Summit County Health Department, Director Phil Bondurant. Good morning.
And good morning, Leslie.
So let's start with the measles. Two people now in Texas have died from a preventable disease. And I guess what you're hearing is, could what's happening in Texas happen right here in Summit County?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's one that we've received quite a few times at the health department, or at least I have. And to understand the answer to that question, we first have to understand measles and what measles is. And it, as you mentioned, it's a preventable disease through vaccination, but it is a virus that's transmitted through respiratory droplets, and it is extremely contagious. It has a 90% contagious rate. So what that means is, if there are 10 people in a room that are susceptible, meaning they're not vaccinated, 9 of those 10 people will be infected just by being exposed to one person. After that exposure, 4 to 12 days, those symptoms that we're familiar with will start. So flu-like symptoms, but really the piece that sets it apart is the measles rash. And in between that exposure and when those symptoms start to occur, the individual is contagious. So even though someone may be feeling well and looks well, no reported symptoms, they still are contagious between the exposure and that 4-day mark. And then, of course, as the symptoms are present, they're contagious as well. And with measles, there is no treatment. So it's kind of a grin and bear it type disease. And that's what we're seeing in Texas right now. As you mentioned, we've had 2 deaths that have been reported in Texas. There's quite a few cases. 38 of the 198 cases, they've had 23 hospitalized, which is, it's a significant number. Of those that were hospitalized, all of them are unvaccinated. And they have had 5 breakthrough cases of the 198. And what that means is that someone had at least one part of the 2-part series for the measles vaccination that ended up with symptoms. Now those symptoms are considerably more mild than a full infection of measles, but breakthrough cases do happen.
So what is it that, what are they dying from? What does it do to the body that would kill somebody?
Yeah, I think when you look at measles, and of course you look at a population, there's a number of different social influences, immunocompromised, the individual's health prior to being infected, the ability to get to care, how long they waited to get to care. But there's a number of complications that can happen when you think about the flu, those flu-like symptoms, high temperatures. It can turn into a secondary infection of pneumonia when you have those different types of sicknesses, I guess is the best way to put it. The body, depending on how it responds to it and how severe the exposure was, can definitely result in more complications that require professional care.
And back in my day, it was like, that's what we did, is that kids just went to the kid with the chicken pox or the measles or the mumps, right? And we got it, but we've figured it out since then.
Yeah, there's a belief that if you were born before 1957, you're considered to be have immunity status. And there was lots of evidence that was occurring, but for some reason in today's measles outbreaks, we're not seeing that same level of resistance or the ability to recover. When you think about in 2024, There were 285 cases nationwide of measles, and here we are in March, and we already have 220-plus cases. Something has changed or something is different. And when we look at the deaths of those children that have died from a preventable disease, there's definitely something different with measles and the way that our bodies currently are responding to that. So we just want to make sure that individuals understand that with the first dose of the two-part series for measles, the MMR vaccine, you have 91% immunity. And with that second dose that occurs at least 4 weeks apart, you bump up to 99% immunity against measles. Now, I talked about there's always breakthrough cases, and that happens. That happens with any vaccine. But we have one of the safest vaccines that we know of that has been studied internationally for a variety of different reasons, for efficacy, for safety, and then, of course, to disprove the myth that the MMR vaccine causes autism. All of those have been studied at length to ensure that the measles vaccine is safe, it's reputable, and it's effective. And with that being said, it could be and is considered by many immunologists to be the safest vaccine. We have plenty of vaccine at the health department. We've seen an uptick in those that are reaching out to receive that vaccination. And we would, if there's one thing I can have the listeners know from today's interview, is that we will get you a vaccine if you want a vaccine, regardless of your status, regardless of where you call home, regardless of your age, where you live now. If you want a vaccine, insurance, we can take insurance. If you can't afford the vaccine or don't have insurance, our nursing director, Derek Moss, has done a really good job through some different grants to make vaccines available for children and adults. And we would never want anybody that wants to be vaccinated to not be able to receive that because of the cost or availability of that vaccine.
Well, March is usually spring break.
Yeah.
And certainly we have a lot of skiers from the Texas area. So is that concerning to you?
I think anytime we have an outbreak like this that has a number of cases, and then we see our spring break travel season picking up, I don't know that it's as much of a concern as it is just the importance of raising awareness. If you were to receive a vaccine today, by the time you left for spring break, you would have a fair amount of protection. And you're right, it's back 50, 60 years ago, measles wasn't having the result it's having now, but it still will have the result that if you get sick while traveling, it is going to ruin your vacation. It's going to make things a little bit less pleasant. It's maybe even miserable. You'll be in a situation where you're receiving medical care from someone that is maybe you're not familiar with or that's out of town. And that goes for people traveling here to Texas or traveling here from Texas as well. Is, you know, we have a situation where the vaccination rate nationally in our kindergartners, which is the group we use to measure because that's required for entrance into school, has dipped from 95.2% in the 2020 school year to now 92.7 in the 2023-2024 school year. And the National Institutes of Health indicate that herd immunity is 95%. So nationally, we have dipped below what herd immunity is for measles. When we look at our rates here in Summit County, our rate is right, as estimated by the state using our kindergartner population, is right around 87%. So we are below that herd immunity, and we have one of the highest exemption rates in the state of Utah for individuals that are exempting or choosing not to vaccinate their children with those childhood preventable vaccines in our community. So as people come from areas where this might be happening, or people that are leaving and going to areas where measles is more endemic, we're just encouraging word of caution, being aware of what situation you're going to. And if you have questions, concerns about the vaccination, we would love to have you give the health department a call. Our nursing staff is all well-educated and well-versed on the topic and is happy to answer any questions you might have around the vaccination and how you might be able to gain access to that.
Okay. Anything else about measles that you want to mention?
No, I, you know, our role in the measles outbreak is prevention, education, and awareness. And I just want to reiterate that regardless of where you come from, where you call home, your feelings on the vaccination, if that's something that you're interested in, we will do everything within our power to make sure that those that want to be vaccinated can be vaccinated.
Okay. January is National Radon Awareness Month. You say March, however, is a good time to retest for radon. Why is that?
Well, it's a shifting of the seasons, even though the weather might indicate that that's not the case. But the daylight is, or our days are a little bit longer now. The weather is starting to warm up. And if you test it in that winter time frame, the changing of the temperatures and that can cause shifts in our soil. And, of course, this is when the construction season kicks off as well. And so with the moving of that earth and the dirt, there's always a chance that radon can shift and where it's finding the least path of resistance entering your home. So if you have tested in the past and it's been low, we just encourage everybody to test about every other year in different seasons across the throughout the year. And we want to make sure that it continues to be on the front of people's minds about radon, the dangers of radon, what it is, and making sure that as you go to your safe space, which is your home and away from the world, that it is a safe space, and that that radon gas, which is odorless, it's you can't see it, that if that is in your home, you can take action to remediate it and keep your safe space safe.
All right. You do have test kits available at the county health departments?
Yeah, we have all three of our locations, Colville, Camas, and Park City, all have radon test kits that are available at the front desk, and our staff is happy to help you with that.
Okay. And again, it needs to be done before we open our windows.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right, because the spring is when we're enjoying that great weather outside, and so this is kind of that last opportunity when the windows are closed, but we see a shifting in the temperatures and the soils, that you might want to give that another peek and just see what's going on in your house.
Okay. You've got a new Board of Health position opening. Who are you looking for?
Yeah, thanks for that question. We learned that one of our Board of Health members that is representing the Snyderville Basin area has taken employment in another state and will be leaving us. And so that means that there's a vacancy, and it's not on the normal cycle. It's mid-cycle, but we will be hopefully have somebody in place by our April meeting, if not April, definitely our May meeting. You'll see that advertised both on the health department website as well as the county website under volunteer opportunities. So if you are within the Snyderville Basin geographic region and are interested in serving on the Board of Health, I would encourage you to keep an eye out for that when that goes live, and make sure you get your application submitted to our county manager, Shane Scott. He is the individual that evaluates those applications and then appoints individuals to the Board of Health.
Okay. So you expect to have that new person on as soon as next month?
Yeah, we'd like to, because we're right in the middle of our approving our community health assessment, which is then going to push us to the community health improvement plan, and we'd like that Board of Health member to be onboarded as soon as possible so that they can participate in this important process.
Okay, you are one of the participants in tonight's Leadership Park City panel. This is happening from 7 to 9 at Jim Santee Auditorium, talking about public safety. So what is it that you're going to be focusing on?
Well, I am very honored to be a part of this panel, looking at the individuals that are on there. I have a great respect for all of them. And when I was invited by Leadership Park City to participate, I was, as I said, I was humbled and honored to be there. But there are a lot of partnerships that exist within this community among these great leaders that public health supports. And I think that Leadership Park City has given us an opportunity to come out and not only continue to support these great people and their agencies in the community, but talk a little bit about how we support them and how they support us. Public health is built on relationships and partnerships. And without those partnerships, whether they're front-facing or operating in the behind the scenes, we can't do a lot of our work without those partnerships. So this is a great opportunity to not only be a part of this panel, but also to come in and share a little bit about the work that we do to support these agencies and how collectively across all five agencies, well, six with the health department, how we are keeping Summit County safe. And it was mentioned in one of the pre-brief meetings that this relationship is not the one that we experience here in Summit County is not something you see across the entire state of Utah. It's very unique to Summit County, and I think we see the results of that. So I'm excited to be a part of it, to continue working with these great leaders and then contributing where we can to make sure that Summit County is really just it's a healthy place, and we're building a healthier community for all.
Okay, Phil, we'll see you next month. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Leslie.
Phil Bondurant, again, the director of the Summit County Health Department. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour in the studio now with an update from U.S. Ski and Snowboard. I have the Director of Marketing and Communications, Courtney Harkins. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see. So we have just wrapped the Alpine World Championships. Let's hit some of the highlights. Those were held where? Italy?
Yeah, those were in Italy. They were over in Sestriere. That's a lie. Sorry. It's been a long morning. The traffic was a little nuts to get in here. but yes, they were over in Italy. It was really an incredible event. They were actually in Austria, now that I'm thinking.
It's the Monday after time change, I get it.
It is, yeah, exactly. yes, they were in Austria. It was a wonderful event. We had some incredible results, which we hope will be indicative of the Olympics here in another year. And the women just crushed. Our very own Lauren Masuga here from Park City, Utah, had a bronze in the Super G. Breezy Johnson, who spends quite a bit of time here, had a gold in the downhill. And then she also combined with, the winningest skier in the world, Michaela Schifrin, to win a gold in the team combined, which is going to be a cool event that we'll see in the Olympics next year. Breezy skied one run of downhill, and then Michaela skied one run of slalom, and they combined their times together to be a really fun team event in a sport that doesn't see a lot of team things happening. And then Paula Moulton brought home a bronze in giant slalom.
Great. And you mentioned the World Championships in another year?
The Olympics in another year.
So
the Olympics are 1 year from, I guess, when this was happening about a few weeks ago. And then we're about 1 year out from the Paralympics as of a couple of days ago. So it's coming fast in Milan Cortina.
Those are in Italy.
Yes.
let's talk real quick. Michaela Schifrin winning. She hit the 100th World Cup win in slalom and again took another third place in Ori. That, I read, brings her to 156 podiums, which I think was another record that she set.
Another record. I think a lot of my work is just creating really cool social posts about Michaela Schifrin's records. But she is really great. She doesn't like to call them breaking records. She likes to call them resetting records, which I think is really nice because she wants to leave the door open to have someone else break it. And, part of her stance is really to inspire that next generation of athletes and of women athletes.
Okay, and where are men in this? Just didn't have...
They had a fourth in the team combined, which was fantastic. They're skiing quite well. They're not quite at that medal yet, but tons of top 10s, tons of top 15s. I think we have a really good chance to see a few of them break through in the Olympics next year and into next year's World Cup season as well.
Okay, we've got what? One more weekend of World Cup?
One more weekend of World Cup, and then we head to the World Cup Finals, which is the Stiefel Sun Valley Finals up in Sun Valley, Utah, just a few hours away from here.
Okay. Let's see. World Championships Cross Country also just wrapped. Tell us how we did there.
They did. We did great. Jesse Diggins, who's an Olympic gold medalist, as well as, I think, three-time Olympic medalist now, has won a silver in the team sprint with Julia Kern, which is fantastic. A really fun event. It's the same event where Jesse won the gold in 2018 as well in the Olympics.
So how does that work?
It's a sprint, so they tag off. It's like a relay. So Jesse will go do a lap, tag on to Julia. Julia will go do a lap, and then it's six laps in total. And it's a really, really exciting event to watch.
Okay. And Rosie Brennan was there.
Was there too, which was great. It was really nice to see her back in action. She had some good results, I think some top 25s. So she's still, chipping away right now. And I think we'll see her come back really strong next season and really even into the rest of the World Cups this year.
Okay. And you also had some other top 10 results?
Yeah, some great top 10s from Gus Schumacher and Julia Kern. Julia was the same woman who won with Jesse. And I think we will expect to see some great results from Gus as well, who was on the podium just a few weeks ago in a World Cup.
Okay. And we've got, what, a couple more events for the season? A
couple more events, and it's really looking like Jessie Diggins is going to bring home the Crystal Globe, which marks her as the best cross-country skier this year on the World Cup.
Okay, turning to freestyle. What's happening there?
Freestyle is currently in Livigno, Italy, which is the home of the Olympics in Milan Cortina. So it's their first time getting to ski on that venue. They've got a World Cup coming up this week. So we should see some fun things happening there and a good opportunity to test that venue. I was just there a few weeks ago and the building was happening. It's going to be very cool and very steep. It kind of looks like Champion for the Moguls team. Mm-hmm. So it's great.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the results.
Jalen Koff has continued to be just on a tear. She's been first or second in every World Cup since the end of December, which I think is 11, and she's won 7 World Cups this year, so she is just dominating. She lives down in Salt Lake. And then Olivia Giacchio was doing really, really well, had 6 podiums. She did just get injured, but again, we expect her to be, you know, one of our strongest contenders in the Olympics next year. And Tess Johnson popped onto the podium for the first time since 2018, just a couple of weeks ago. So exciting to see her there, and we'll have that women's team is just undeniably strong.
Okay, I thought Ali Masuga, she was in NORAMs.
She was in NORAMs. Yeah, she won a couple of NORAMs. She's been coming back. She's been battling a lot of injuries. So, and she just, you know, when she doesn't crash, she can be one of the fastest women out there.
Okay, but I think she did take the top spot there?
Yes, she did. She did win the NORAM, which is fantastic.
Which basically guarantees her the World Cup start for next year.
Exactly, correct.
So it's an important win.
Yes.
Okay, taking a look at aerials then.
Yeah, and then aerials is continuing as well. So, you know, those two have been competing alongside both moguls and aerials quite often this season. And Chris Lillis, who lives here as well, is continuing to have great results. He's an Olympic gold medalist from 2022. 4 podiums just this year in 2025. So I think we'll see some solid finishes from all of these. We've got the world champs coming up next in Engadin and St. Moritz here in, a week. So coming fast.
Okay. And in the free ski world?
Free ski, we just finished off our slopestyle World Cup season at the Calgary Snow Rodeo, which is a World Cup up in Canada. And then in Stoneham Halfpipe was in Calgary and slopestyle was in Stoneham. Nick Gepper was second, Alex Ferreira third, and Alex Ferreira won that Crystal Globe. So he's the one who's just continuing. He's won a number of medals before, but never gold. And he is entirely focused on winning a gold medal next year in the Games. And then Rel Harwood was third. She's a young up-and-comer and has been popping onto the podium quite regularly this year.
Okay, and then snowboards?
Snowboard, we just wrapped the first event at the Snow League, which is Sean White's new event, kind of a different format of half-pipe snowboarding, kind of a more of a head-to-head style, and it was a really big success. Lots of people in the crowd and really just a fun way of showcasing the sport. And our very own Maddie Mastro took second. And she also won the Crystal Globe about a week before. So again, best snowboarder in the world.
Wow, that's impressive. Okay, you also wanted to highlight a documentary film that's about snowboarding?
Yeah, there's a really cool documentary we just released with this brand Together, who's a women's sports-specific brand, all about our women on our snowboarding team. It's on YouTube. If you look it up, Together is with an X. But it does feature Maddie Mastro, who we just chatted about, and a few other of the up-and-comings. So it's a really cool way to get behind the scenes in the kind of park and pipe snowboarding world.
Okay. And Nick Baumgartner back.
Nick Baumgartner's back.
He's one of our older team members.
Yeah. He is. He's 43 years old. He won a gold medal with Lindsay Jacob Ellis in 2022. And he podiumed for the first time last week in 2.5 years. I did see the stat that the two people on the podium with him, combining their age, they still did not reach 43. So he is feeling a little bit older right now, but still strong. He got fourth with a teammate, Bree Schnorbusch, and she is 19 years old. So he had his first World Cup start before she was born.
Okay. All right. And taking a look at the para team then?
I was just out in Steamboat with the para snowboard team, and it was such a cool event. Those guys are so impressive, and they are the best para snowboard team in the world as of the Steamboat race. So they won the Nations Cup for the 2024-25 season. So, and then that included Noah Elliott winning the overall Crystal Globe, Izzy Hicks and Brenna Huckabee winning the snowboard cross globe, and then Noah Elliott, of course, winning the bank slalom globe. So some really, really good results from those guys in the World Cup.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I think just reiterating that the Stiefel Sun Valley Finals are coming up here in just a couple of weeks, on March 22nd to 27th, just a few hours from Park City. So it'll be an opportunity to see the best alpine ski racers in the world, like Michaela Schifrin, like Lindsey Vonn, et cetera. So, please, if you can, drive on up.
Okay. Thank you, Courtney.
Thanks a lot.
Courtney Harkins, again, the Director of Marketing and Communications for U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Well, Park City Opera has an upcoming event to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, and on the phone to tell us more, I have the co-founder and development director of Park City Opera, Lisa Wangerman. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So begin by telling us a little bit about Park City Opera. I mean, it's a relatively new nonprofit here in town.
Yes, so we are coming up on our one-year anniversary, and we are so excited about everything that we accomplished in the past year. We've produced over 20 concerts of art songs, arias, and scenes from different operas in a variety of venues across town. So we've really been able to explore the community, meet a lot of different people, and get really excited for our next year ahead.
Okay, so how big of a company is it?
So currently we have a core team of three with additional administrative helpers, including some high school students in the area. And we have been expanding our artistic roster to include a lot of very talented local musicians, both singers and instrumentalists. And we are looking forward to this summer inviting a cast of national singers for our main stage production of The Barber of Seville by Rossini.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up. So the three of you, we've got what, an alto, a baritone, and a soprano? Is that how it works?
No, not exactly. So two of us, we're both singers, and then our third team member and co-founder is actually a pianist and a composer, which has been really great because we can offer a lot of different perspectives on the repertoire that we program. Something that is so unique about art song repertoire is that it is really broad and diverse, and each singer can have a facet of this genre that they really love and are passionate about. And so the larger a team is, the more perspective can be offered in discussing and planning what we present to audiences. So it's been really good to have a variety of different perspectives represented on our team.
So at this point, are you performing full operas?
So we are performing our first full opera this August. We are so, so excited about The Barber of Seville, and we'll be performing it in two different venues. We'll be performing one performance at the Santee Auditorium at the Park City Library on August 24th. That will be a matinee performance. And then we will also be doing two performances, one on August 29th and one on August 30th at the Premier Park City. So we're really looking forward to that. And that will be with orchestra.
Okay, so what's happening March 17th?
Yes, so this is our celebration of St. Patrick's Day at the Jordanelle State Park in their beautiful Hailstone Event Center. It is a glass pavilion, and we'll be bringing in a piano and a couple of really, really talented singers to sing songs and arias that represent Irish heritage and culture.
Okay, so I mentioned on the 17th and at Jordanelle, the Hailstone Event Center, what time?
At 7 o'clock. And preceding the performance, we'll have a reception sponsored by Park City Brewing.
All right. Go ahead.
Sorry, just to elaborate on that, I know that celebrating St. Patrick's Day is with a concert of classical music might be a little bit out of people's experience of the holiday. So we wanted to make sure that we included that traditional St. Patrick's Day element in our festivities.
Okay, so what is it that you're going to be performing then?
So our program will be structured around Samuel Barber's Hermit Songs. And this is a really famous art song cycle that features texts written by Irish monks and scholars in very early, going all the way back to the 8th century. And these were translated later by famous authors. Samuel Barber set them to these really beautiful and fun music. Like, he has a real sense of humor about the texts that were written by these very scholarly and serious people. And so that will be the primary framework of the recital. And between every couple of songs, there'll be folk song arrangements, selections from different operas, and other things like that.
Okay. How much are tickets?
So tickets start at $55 and include that reception.
Okay. And people can, get tickets online?
Yes. So our tickets are available online at www.parkcityopera.org.
All right. And then besides the Barbers of Seville, what else you've got coming up?
So we are also performing at the Meyer Gallery on April 26th. We have two performances that evening, one at 6 p.m. and one at 8 p.m. And that will be a really intimate, unique setting to experience art songs inspired by the visual art that is featured in the gallery at that time. Again, that will also include a reception, and we are really looking forward to that. We are also currently planning our summer concert series, and we look forward to returning to some of the venues from last summer. So stay tuned for exciting announcements on that front.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, just want to say thank you to everyone that has attended and supported Park City Opera so far in this first year. And we really look forward to meeting new audience members and including more and more of the community in what we do.
Okay, Lisa Wangerman, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lisa Wangerman, again, is the co-founder and development director of Park City Opera. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour in the studio now with an update from Park City Education Foundation. I have President and CEO Ingrid Whitley along with Vice President of Advancement, Jen Bellow. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, let's just start quick with the news that Park City School District at its retreat reported anticipating a budget deficit of just over $4 million. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how is it that the Ed Foundation, if at all, could help with that?
Yeah, you know, I can't really speak to their budget. That's obviously set by the school board. We provide about $2 million in extra support to the school district on an annual basis. And that primarily goes to support programs that we fund, our eight initiatives, preschool all the way through high school graduation and beyond. So yeah, I can't speak to the budget deficit, but we're really proud to be able to provide that $2 million to the school district.
Okay, and do you have the resources to provide more? I mean, if programs were to be...
You know, not really. That type of funding is, you know, a little bit out of our wheelhouse. And I think I read on your own website that, you know, that just was a super preliminary, you know, numbers are going to change and things like that. So definitely if the school district, for instance, with the bond, you know, they wanted us to step up in a bigger way, and we did. You know, we went out and asked donors, but to come in on a last-minute thing would be a little tricky.
Yeah, we really needed to wait for the legislative session to end, find
yes.
out where everything
mm-hmm.
yeah landed. All right, well, preschool registration is open and ongoing. What kind of interest are you seeing?
Yeah, really, really strong interest. We have about over 203 registrations so far, but we have room for more. So if you are still interested in getting a spot for your 3 or 4 year old for next year, we have full day and half day options available. Still, you just need to go to the PCSD website to register for that.
Okay, and these are, where would the preschool be at?
Yeah, all four elementary schools, mm-hmm. so Jeremy, Trailside, Parley's, and McPullen. And we really encourage parents, if you're not sure if there are spots, please reach out. We do still have availability at all schools.
At all four schools, mm-hmm. okay. And you, out of the two, three, how many can you actually take total?
In each school?
No, just as a total. Yes.
Oh, I think we can go up to 283.
Okay, so
yeah. There are spots available still. Yep.
Great. Great. And then that's for preschool starting?
Yep, in August? Next school year. Yep, August. Yep. And the day starts at 8. And if you're interested in after school care, that registration will open on April 21st. And you can get care for your child until 6 p.m. And it's a really affordable option. For parents, it's $400 a month extra for after school. Or if you're on scholarship, it's $65 a month. So if you're doing the full day and you're on scholarship, it's $190 a month from 8 to 6.
Okay. And can parents drop off kids earlier than 8?
I think it opens maybe as early as 7:30, I want to say. Yeah.
Yes. And at McPullen, there is a before school. And so, yes, you remember that, Grant, Leslie. You have such a good memory. So that be sure to check in with your local school to be sure.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about Running with Ed. You're preparing for that right now.
Yes, so we're very excited. Registration has opened. Running with Ed is May 17th. We're in early bird registration now, which would save you $50 a person. If you register now, it's $100 versus starting April 1st, it'll be $150. You know, it's our great 8-leg relay race around Park City. If you have teams of 8, everybody can run a leg. There's a leg as short as 1.3 miles. There's legs that are 6 miles. There's legs up the stairs of the U. Or you can take a chairlift, and it's costumes, it's community, great finish party. And it's just a great local community event. That's what we hear is that, wow, this really feels local. This really brings our community together in support of education. And we hope to raise $325,000. So that's a big piece of that $2 million that comes back to the school district. And, you know, we really do need to shout out Park City Mountain Vale Epic Promise, because when they came to town 10 years ago, we've been working with them 10 years, and they said, what can we support? And we talked about preschool, and they immediately saw the benefit in supporting preschool for the community. They're a big supporter of early child care in general. So they've been supporting preschool for 10 years, including that $250,000 gift they made last year. And then they've also been the presenting sponsor of Running with Ed for the last 10 years, and a sponsor even before that when they were just Canyon. So they really have been an incredible partner to the Ed Foundation for 10 years. And so we want to shout them out. And Running with Ed is, again, I mean, KPCW is a sponsor. It's so much fun to see everybody out there running alongside teachers, parents, and the community. And so go register now while you can get the less expensive price. And I also want to shout out, we scholarship all free and reduced students. So last year, I think we had almost 150 free and reduced students running in the race. And that's another reason why the race feels so inclusive. And then thanks to Christie's Real Estate, we scholarship every teacher in the school district and Park City School District employee. So they get to run for free for two. But if you're a teacher or a school district employee in any school, whether it's Wileman or, you know, Wasatch School District, that is only $50 instead of the $100. So really, again, supporting education.
Great. How many teams do you have? Because it is all done in teams, except for the coolest.
the people who run the whole 27.6 miles. So we typically, it's interesting, we always end up between 190 and 210 teams. And teams can be any size you want. So if you have 4 people and want to run 2 legs each, that's great. If you have 2 people who want to split it, if you have 6 people and you decide I'm going to skip, you know, 2 legs in the middle and just run into the field house from trailside, we don't really care. We don't time the race. What's important is those costume contests, fundraising contests, the best exchange. And so really it's just get your family, your friends, your colleagues. It's also a great day for businesses to kind of do employee engagement. So we've had several businesses run it for many, many years, and it's a very inexpensive way to bring your team together. You know, you're waiting at the exchanges. The schools put on these amazing parties. It's not healthy. There's a lot of chocolate, dipped strawberries, and candy. You think it's a healthy fundraiser, but there is a lot of yummy food along the way.
You run off those calories.
You do. You run them right off, especially if you run up the stairs of the UOP. And then we have this great party at the field house. So, again, I really urge everyone to go to runningwithed.com to register.
If a single runner, I mean, can you help them find a team?
Yes, absolutely. So this year we do have a spot on our website that is, you know, I need a runner or I need a team, I think it is. And we'll collect those and put teams together for you.
Okay. And with that $325,000, where does it go?
Actually, that all goes to our classroom grant program. So classroom grants are our oldest program. That's how the Ed Foundation started. A teacher needed a grant to send two of her students to a space camp at Stanford. Since 1986, we've granted almost 950 classroom and express grants. So it's our oldest program. It is really where the rubber meets the road. So teachers, admin, staff, as long as you're a Park City School District employee, you can ask for money to fund something in your classroom or your school that you want to try. So innovative things or that you've been doing for a long time. And it's a competitive process, but we grant about $250,000 to $300,000 every year in classroom and express grants. One of our longest running grants right now is debate, and they just won state on Saturday. So the debate teacher, Anna Williams, she told us, oh, you know, this is a rebuilding year. I've lost a lot of seniors. We're not going to do very well. And now she just, her team has just blown everybody away and they just won state. So for a public high school to win the state championship, that's actually pretty rare. So we're very proud to have been funding that for 12 years.
All right. When do those grant applications open?
So they opened on February 1st. Right. So we're in classroom grant season right now, which is kind of cool because it runs alongside with Running with Ed. Grant applications are due April 1st. And then we sit down with the school district to make sure, especially with technology, we have to make sure that their systems and filters will work with new tech that teachers want to bring in. And then we have a classroom grant committee that is made up of mostly educators and students, and they go through all the grants and make suggestions either on partial or full funding or possibly not funding. We get usually double the requests of what we have money for, and then our board will vote on those recommendations at the beginning of May, and then we let everybody know right after Running with Ed.
Yeah, which is great because then they've got it for next year.
Absolutely. Yes, the money is available August 1st.
Okay. Let's talk about a couple of upcoming events. A big one, March 20th.
Yeah, we're really excited. We have an incredible Park City School District family who is flying in the Second City, which is a comedy troupe from Chicago. I know.
It's amazing.
I can't wait to see them. Tickets are still available if you go to our website. We're really excited. This is the first time we're offering this event. We couldn't do it without this family. So
what's the connection?
They're a family, yeah, of two students in the district, and they are just wanting to support PCEF through this generosity.
Okay, I mean, do they know somebody in Second City, or are they just, you can just rent them out? I don't know how it works.
I actually don't know how they're connected to the Second City. I think they just know they're incredible, and they've had them come out for another fundraiser that they've offered, and so we're really excited to be taking advantage of their generosity in this way. We'd love to have everyone come out and have a fun night of comedy.
Yeah, exclusive. The tickets aren't cheap.
They're not, you know, this is a fundraiser, but every dollar of the ticket will go to support PCEF. We're also going to have the band and choir, students from the band and choir perform at this event. And so we'll have students there. Students will also be supporting the culinary part of the evening. We'll have chefs making food, and students will be working alongside them. So it's really an opportunity to see our students in action and just have a really fun, kind of casual, silly night out.
And the Second City, we had to fill out this big survey about, you know, Park City Ed Foundation and the school district in Park City. So it's a specific performance around Park City.
Tailored to us.
Yeah. Like a bespoke comedic experience.
Yeah.
So we're very excited to see this. It should be really fun. And then the chefs are the chef of 350 Main and a couple of other nice Park City chefs. And we're really excited that five of our culinary students are going to be working alongside them. Super cool opportunity for them. So if you think about, you know, a really nice dinner out for and then a bespoke, you know, performance, you would be probably paying more than the ticket price. And again, all of it goes back to the Ed Foundation. So we're very excited about that.
Okay, so tickets are how much?
They're $500 a person.
Okay. And can be bought online, PCEF4kids.org.
Yes. Perfect.
Some other upcoming dates in April?
Yes, so just a reminder that April 21st is when registration for after school opens up. So preschool's ongoing now, after school opens April 21st. On April 25th is Excellent Educator Awards. So that's where we go around to all the schools and surprise the Excellent Educator of the Year. Such a fun day. We have the band and the surprise. The families are there to surprise the winner, and it's a really great day. And then of course, May 17th is Running with Ed.
Okay, anything else, ladies?
I don't think so. It's a full spring. Come out and support PCF and our kids and our teachers. Thank you.
Okay, Ingrid, Jen, thanks so much.
Thanks, Leslie.